One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious.
Show and push me up against the wall and said that life's no dress. Rehearsal, yeah. The lava sun is in, he got me right before the show and push me up against the wall and said that life's no dress. Yeah, 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 yeah. Rehearsal, yeah, find the beauty, it is calm. Yeah, find the beauty, it is calm. Yeah, find the beauty, it is calm. Everything's fine, cause where there's love, there's always time. Everything's fine, where there's love, there's always time. Everything is fine, where there's love, there's always time. Everything's fine again, cause where there's love, there's enough time again. And find the beauty, it is gone. Yeah, find the beauty, it is gone. Yeah, find the beauty, it is gone.
Tuned into The Wizard, WZRD Chicago. And that song was by an artist named Violet, who is with us in the studio today and brought a friend named Diane Hamm. They're here to talk about the music and its involvement in an upcoming show as part of Rhino Fest. Welcome, Violet.
Thank you for having me, Wizard.
Very, very welcome. And welcome, Diane.
Hey.
We have several archetypes already represented in our introductions. Please tell us where that song came from and what it's soundtracking in the near future.
Sure. Actually, that's a pretty old song. I wrote it about 10 years ago when I was just kind of embarking on some of my more Buddhist-flavored excursions into spiritual exploration and stuff. And, you know, just the concept that the transience is inevitable and that attachment's kind of the root of suffering and things like that, where everything sucks if you wait long enough kind of comes in, is just kind of like a really, I think, pretty contemporary, sexy way to put it.
So. Nice.
And this everything sucks transient.
Well, the chorus is find the beauty, it's calming, because the change is really what's causing the stress.
Mm-hmm.
the expectation is that things will stay the same because that's a basic ego identity sort of like mechanism to kind of like keep a steady identity. And the change is inevitable. And so like as it moves, the ego becomes more stressed out. Because as the reality kind of differs from the expectation.
That's true to all of us, yes? It's no. Not just the artist or...
Yeah, I was trying to... I'm always trying to go for the widest cultural relevance I possibly can get.
Okay. Being that you wrote this 10 years ago, I presume your career or your experience in music has been a long time in coming.
And yeah, this actually isn't even the first incarnation of its recorded existence.
It's stepped up many levels since.
Well, I've added a new chorus with this version that's coming out on Saturday. Uh-huh. But the version that's already out on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Tidal, YouTube Music, Pandora, and Yandex is called Ing, I-N-G, all caps, like the bank, paren, everything sucks, and that's by my band, Dr. Death Crush.
All right, Dr. Death Crush.
Oh, it's Crush, like Crush. Like the orange soda.
Crush. Mm-hmm. You're performing this song and others this weekend coming, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely for tell Bipolar
us,
Bitch.
Tell us about Bipolar Bitch.
Oh, it's our new play.
Yeah, it is.
Diane and I have been working very hard with a lot of other bipolar women.
That's right. Kelly Ankers is sort of spearhead of the project. She's the producer, and it's under Sweetback Productions, which is her company, her theater company. And so she sort of came up with the concept. I've always wanted to do a show about bipolar. It's crashed a number of times. I haven't been able to realize the vision, but she just picked the right people this time. So it's coming together. It came together. It's together.
Yeah, it is together.
It exists. Mm-hmm. It's manifest in the universe now. Yeah, for sure.
And we'll be watching this on Saturday.
Yeah.
10:30. Rhino Fest Prop Theater.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Anybody know the address?
3502 North Elston.
I bet Diane knows it.
So the Bipolar Bitch, that definitely seems transience from moment to moment. Is that part of the connection with that last piece?
To the extremes.
Yeah. And especially in terms of my personal experience of bipolar, it's mixed bipolar. Uh-huh. So I experience a wide variety of symptoms of both mania and depression on a seemingly constant and synchronistical basis. Like they're simultaneous. I have like... manic depression in a really, really specific way. A lot of people go through like phases. Bipolar 1 and bipolar 2 are kind of marked by either 3 or I think 5 of each.
Yeah, I think there's mixed episodes. And
Mixed episodes are definitely something a lot of people have, but I'm kind of like living a constant mixed episode.
So were you part of the creation of this play, which I know nothing about, which we're going to hear a little bit about? Bipolar Bitch is definitely a title that... causes interest and curiosity. And here you are with this song, and you're saying personal experience, and Diane as well?
Mm-hmm. To some extent, yeah. I mean, okay. I've had my issues with mental illness over the years, so and the extremes of emotion. So that's something that I think our culture really suppresses.
Yeah.
Is people suppress their emotion, are in resistance to it or in denial to it, and it's going to manifest. You need to deal with that. You need to look at it, and you need to examine it. And that's part of why Carl Jung is sort of the vehicle in which we look at these issues, because he is sort of the founder of shadow work and looking at things that we repress into the unconscious and to look at them, you know, through archetypes and symbols and things like that. So.
And you represent Carl Jung and some of these archetypes in theater.
Well, Carl Jung is actually a character in the play, and he plays Carl Jung in the play. And
the real Carl Jung came to play.
Well, Carl Jung is being channeled by Larry Hart, who is an amazing actor, and also the graphic designer, and also the sound designer for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody's got like 8 hats on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That seems to go hand in hand with bipolar, if I can reach a little bit. At least there's many... aspects of life to integrate into this shell.
Integration is definitely one of the key phrases from the show.
Right. So the arc of the show is such that we see fragmented aspects of our archetypes, ourselves, which are represented through different archetypes. Each character in the play is a representation of Violet's subconscious. And often would include the shadow side of that subconscious in a fragment, in a piece, in a mosaic. because that's a, you know, big theme in the Jungian psychology, is this whole idea of mosaic. And then that energy rides up through mania to its apex and then crashes and comes down. And then there's nowhere else to go but to integrate the energy. So it's an energetic ride more than a storyline. The thread of the show is one about energy rather than one about story per se. So it's, we're taking you on an experience through mania.
Visually, audibly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Auditorily, through dance, through movement, through music, and it's mm-hmm. pretty much centered around Violet.
All right, the centerpiece, was the play, or was the experience written for you, or were you, let's say, the idea came and...
Yeah, the idea came for Kelly, I think, probably years and years ago, and she did try to mount the work, as we'd said, with, I believe, Jillian.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Kellyanne Corcoran and a number of other people, all bipolar. Yeah.
Woo! And then this incarnation was kind of birthed of her coming to my open mic and liking what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, hey, want to be in this thing called Bipolar Bitch? And I was like, that sounds engaging. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And then I really didn't have much... input or influence over the thematic elements, the sort of, like, I mean, there's really no plot. It's a very feminine script.
Very.
There's a loose arc to the piece, but it's very much just kind of vignettes and really just beautiful.
It's
a mosaic. It really is a mosaic.
It's, I mean, you're entering this sacred space in which mm-hmm. you can take a transformational journey along with Violet. So.
Yeah, and so in that ways, I didn't really like write the thing, and it wasn't written for me. It was written about the, you know, various people writing about themselves a lot of the time and kind of coalescing into some gestalt-y.
Yeah, I'd say it's a work of synchronicities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
being that each person brought themselves into it.
Uh-huh. You mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And right. Our shadow selves and our integrated selves, or our enlightened, you know, that where we're going towards,
exactly.
Our movement towards enlightenment.
As close to integrated selves as
we can, exactly. Get there at the moment. We're still all working on it, you know.
I mean, isn't that a life?
I'm amazing, so.
Yeah, you are. What?
So, speaking of amazing, what is your part, being that you're the centerpiece and they have the four archetypes, mm-hmm. what else are you performing? Or?
So I did write all the music.
Okay.
And I wrote I wrote the score as well, so the various
interstitial
parts, the interstitial aspects of it were also mine. And as a side note, that will be available as an EP, as an NEP pretty soon, called Bipolar Bitch. The single Everything Sucks that we just played from Bipolar mm-hmm. Bitch will be coming out on Saturday
mm-hmm.
As the play debuts, which is, I think, pretty tasty. But yeah, it's... I forgot what the question was.
You have many
Oh, right.
Hats.
It all happens. That was the thing. It all happens through sort of the lens of my experience.
Okay.
So these, as she said, the you know, disparate aspects of my consciousness are being represented by these other people throughout the whole, you know, show, and in a way they are kind of me.
Yeah.
And so in that way, that's kind of my involvement in it, is I'm kind of I'm a siren archetype.
Okay.
And so kind of like a creator archetype.
The lure.
Very fifth chakra. So.
The one who lures us into our crash into enlightenment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of, let's say, one of the experiences of Violet that are portrayed by one or more of these others?
Well.
On stage.
Well, shoot.
We could talk about mine if you want.
Yeah, yeah. I think that makes sense.
That's a good one, yes.
Diane represents...
Hypersexualized,
yeah. What's
energy?
One of,
yeah,
hypersexualized energy is definitely a manic symptom,
for sure.
And I think sex is, I think, a very unconscious drive for most human beings that we don't really like to acknowledge in our puritanical nightmare here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think something worth exploring, and something that we explore with Diane's character in the show through dance and. And, you know, text as well.
Yeah, I would say my character's arc, or I should say that fragmented piece of consciousness is arc.
Mm-hmm.
If I try to put it in the...
That is so meta.
That is so meta. But it is. It's all very meta. She wants connection, but she doesn't really know how to get it. And for her, she tries to find that connection through dominance and submission initially. You know, either being the one who's dominating or the one who is submitted. And in the end, she succumbs to the death figure.
Mm.
She's literally, like, she dies on stage.
Mm.
And it's through letting go of that aspect of ego, because it's all egoic, you know, the drive to either dominate or be completely submissive, because in either one of those states, you really don't have a sense or a state of responsibility.
Mm.
And so she gets resurrected, or, you know, she goes through this transformation where she finds that any true power is actually love. It isn't mm-hmm. Force. So... Yeah.
Tasty.
So there's a difference between power and force, and she tries to find connection through force, and then discovers actual connection and powers through love, mm-hmm. which comes back in the mandala piece, because she's sort of like the priestess that's sort of overseeing, or, you know, the mm-hmm. the mandala building, you know, which represents yeah. integration of all these pieces of the self.
You definitely come back with that, with a very shamanic energy.
Exactly.
Do you believe that in that segment of which I've been fortunate enough to see a preview of, that segment of the piece where you call it the mandala,
mm-hmm.
All of these archetypes come towards loving Violet and or vice versa, and or
yeah.
accepting
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
settling with the chaos,
really. I mean, at that integrating,
they're integrating okay. their yeah. shadow selves, you mm-hmm. know, so they you have to accept the totality of yourself in order to move into the next level of mm-hmm. consciousness or understanding. Mm-hmm. So I really think that, you know, the whole mandala, everybody is discovering each other. They're discovering the self. They're discovering, you know, these pieces become aware of each other. It's mm-hmm. an awareness. Suddenly mm-hmm. there's an awareness there where there was a blindness, mm-hmm. you know.
And there's an exchange of love, which is really bonding.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately at the last verse of this song, everything's fine. Where there's love, there's always time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of the time we'll get caught up in our drama,
yeah.
in our life, and we'll feel like, oh, I'm running out of time, I'm wasting my life, or things like that. And especially as things change, you're just like, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, and you got to remember that where there's love, there's always time to integrate. There's always time for an exchange that's going to make your life better. Mm. It's going to raise your vibration forever and ever and ever. And that's just kind of how.
And it expands outward.
The trajectory goes. Yeah, yeah. You radiate that nonsense. Woo woo.
There it is.
I presume that Kelly, being the writer, Kelly Anchors, you mentioned her earlier,
uh-huh.
Wrote this with partly that intention that there is some kind of... resolution, if you will, or mm-hmm. Happy ending, for lack of better terms. And is that true? Do you know this? And were you guys part of that putting it into form?
Well, Kelly and I sat down in a lot of coffee houses, including Kopi Cafe in Andersonville, and we sort of hashed out these ideas, mm-hmm. you know, over and over again in terms of the direction to take the show. But she keeps coming up with new ideas. Which mm-hmm. which we have to sort of tamp down a little
so
bit
every,
as we
integrate.
Open Saturday.
every show will be different then.
Yeah.
Maybe a different time.
Probably.
Yeah. So I think she's even got even more ideas to expand it outwards, mm-hmm. you know. So I can't speak for her, but,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Expanding it outwards. And being that this ending, we're not giving away any specific part of it, it's just the mood of the piece leads eventually, at least one part of it, to an integration, a feeling of self-love and outer love. And mm-hmm. Do you, from feedback or otherwise, believe or feel that the audience comes out with that or gives it back to you to go on your night?
I mean, as much as an artist is in control of that, we can hope as hard as we can that that's what they get.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. Yeah. You never really know.
Mm-hmm. It does depend on them as well, being yeah. whether well receiving or not so or otherwise.
Mm.
But Rhino Fest probably carries a open audience ready to accept.
So.
Yeah. This is your first play with Kelly?
This is my first play with Kelly, yeah.
First play with...
with any of these people.
Any of these. So mm-hmm.
Well, I've worked with Kelly before, but not... I mean, on other plays by other people, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah. and some of those have been
other shows. There's one of the most amazing ones she was in is called Playing God, that I really love, by Matt Rieger. That was a full-scale production by Curious Theater a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most recent one was called Crossing Aviva,
mm-hmm.
that she was also in. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would speaking of Kelly's role in this, does she wrote it? I assume
she directed it.
She directed it, and she also performs in this. Yes?
Yeah, she does. Mm-hmm. She's Miss Sarah Quell, the caretaker fairy.
Uh huh. May I ask if there is a song that might sort of emulate something she's involved in the play? Is that a correct assumption?
The second song that I've given you actually to play isn't a part of the play.
No.
It's a separate thing.
It's
totally
a separate thing.
Separate thing, huh?
I've got a couple irons.
Oh.
I've got hats on, I've got irons in.
All right.
What I do.
We're here then, if you'd like to mention that other
I'd
iron.
Love to. And I love Bipolar Bitch and the alliteration there.
Yeah.
Dr. Death Crush is my band.
Uh-huh.
I am a rock goddess.
Yeah.
And.
Word.
Thanks, Dan. And we perform mostly in Logan Square, Wicker Park, and Bucktown. We have a monthly residency at the Gallery Cabaret every first Friday. The next one's February 1st,
uh-huh.
around 11 p.m. And it's free. Free exorcisms, $5 face slaps, because I am a psychic dominatrix witch doctor.
Nice.
Wow.
There's a lot of stuff there to unpack. But if you want to play the song, it's called Because of the Drugs.
We almost put it in the show.
We did almost put it in the show. Uh-huh. And I most likely will play it as a part of the post-show cabaret that mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing.
All right.
But it's a tasty little number that is about drugs. A lot of my songs about drugs. And murder. A lot of murder and drugs for Dr. Death Crush. Those are a lot of the things we like to explore.
That's serious transformational energy. You realize
this,
right?
No kidding.
Well,
yeah,
both of them, yes. Yeah. Transform physically and definitely spiritually, mentally.
Jai Shankar.
Let's hear Because of the Drugs.
Now you don't know, and you don't even try, 'cause I funnier, wizard.
That was the voice of another member of your cast in this bipolar bitch.
Paul Brennan.
He plays the hero slash catatonic archetype.
Since he
Alprazolam.
Alprazolam. Yes.
Alprazolam. Yes. It's a sedative.
That was the only one I didn't recognize. Okay.
Yeah.
And the others were
lithium. Lithium. Mood stabilizer. Uh-huh. Antidepressant. Seroquel, which is an antipsychotic. Let's see.
Adderall,
which is for ADD. Let's see what else is there. That's mainly it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That was why I associated the song that you sent me that one without with the drugs. It's because of the drugs. Because you did mention these drugs, or at least they were depicted, if you will. Mm-hmm. And Kelly was somehow distributing at some moment. But Paul, he couldn't be here, so he sent us a couple of sound bites, that being the lasting survivor. What is his archetype?
So he plays the hero slash catatonic. And this is really interesting because I learned some stuff just learning about the archetype. The hero is obviously takes a hero's journey, where you're sort of, you're setting out to discover yourself, really, is what that's about. And what's really interesting is the heroic energy is something where you are saving something, or you have competency and efficacy in the world, and it's sort of like this, being able to build and create. But there's also the shadow side of the hero is the catatonic. And his catatonia stems from a very deep depression. And it's flavored with this grandiosity. And what grandiosity is this belief, it's a delusion, that you are so important, that you have so much power that you can affect everything. But when that comes up in a negative way, it's as if you have this delusion that everything you do is causing catastrophe. And so he's depressed because his character feels like no matter what it does, like if he breathes on something, he's going to cause a catastrophe somewhere else in the world, like the butterfly effect of catastrophe. Mm. But, the flip side of that is like the energy you put out into the world will actually, make some positive impact or whatever, the heroic thing. So that's kind of interesting that the shadow side comes out like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And quite well described of what I think we all go through, just a guess.
Sure.
Maybe on an extreme scale, perhaps, but...
Everybody's got it.
The beautiful thing about, I think, experiencing this play for people who don't have bipolar disorder is everyone's, a teeny bit bipolar.
Oh,
I mean, we both have... Everybody has poles.
Yeah. Mm.
It's just, super obvious sometimes when you've got poles that are really super far from each other and disrupt your life, then you're maybe in a bipolar disorder kind of a place.
Yeah.
But everybody's got them. I think it's universal in that way.
I call it high voltage.
High voltage.
High voltage people. So you have this very strong mania, ascension, and really strong depression, crash. And it's the sort of these two pole. And the further away, I think, those emotions are energetically, the bigger the charge that's going to come out of them. So for me, I find it fascinating.
That's wild. That physics just blew my mind.
Yeah, you're high voltage.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, to me, the poles seem to be like you say, everybody's got them. And let's just say the people who are extreme, they stick out and they're like radar poles or antennas. And they either absorb high frequencies and or broadcast high frequencies.
Absolutely.
These are the...
And I have to say, Kelly is my favorite high-voltage person because she can pick up stuff.
She is dynamite.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. She is dynamite, literally and figuratively.
No, yeah.
Amazing. Mm. Like, Sparkle Fest dynamite.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, Violet, that Kelly came to one of your shows, and you mentioned Death Crush.
Dr. Death Crush.
Dr. Death Crush.
Yeah.
And that song was a Dr. Death Crush song, not necessarily picked for the play, but...
Mm-hmm. It was one that I played solo on the piano.
Okay.
And she heard my voice and was into it.
And that's a regular routine for you at this
definitely
event?
Every Wednesday.
Tell us.
I do an event called Magic Freak Out, which is an open mic night from 10 to 2 that celebrates 15 minutes of creative exploration, expression, and experience on the Gallery Cabaret stage with crazy lights and some sound effects and stuff.
All right. And that song was with your band, but you have other members of the band. Can you mention?
I do. The very lovely and talented Stephen Lin was the one on the guitar solo there at the end. He's an amazing guitarist and songwriter. Mike Bibby is my bassist, and he is also the mastering engineer for our projects that have been recorded. And Michael Gonzalez is the drummer and art director. For the band. He's an amazing, incredible drummer. Makes me flip. He also is a super, super gifted visual artist, and he did all my ink.
Woo!
On my arms.
On your arms, mm-hmm. Yes. I see them. Yeah, it's good to be, yes, radio is wonderful, but it's good to be really inside the radio and see what you're exemplifying.
They're cool, so take my word for it.
Yeah, they're cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Follow me on Instagram, Psychic Dominatrix, and you can see them.
Yeah. You mentioned several, I don't know if they're different personas, but several different ways to name you. Yeah.
And, yeah, I've got a lot of titles.
And where do we find you? So you mentioned one. Sure. Let's go through that list, please.
Definitely. Well, Psychic Dominatrix is probably my first go-to in terms of social media interaction. It's my Instagram handle, and it is also the name of the upcoming single we're about to record with Dr. Death Crush, because we had a successful Kickstarter fund, and now we're going in the studio with it. Yeah. Very, very grateful, very, very thankful for all the people who donated to that. And we're also on Dr. Death Crush on Instagram, Dr. Death Crush on Facebook. On Facebook, my profile, feel free to friend me, I'm down, is Violette, because of the Judean Christian nightmare that we're living. I had to have two names, and I don't have a last name. I'm like Cher, Madonna, or, you know.
There's a few others, yes. Thor.
Thor, definitely.
Yeah. Electric, that's your lightning there.
Yeah, it
Diane.
Is. Diane. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Voltage. Bzz.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. And then seeing you this weekend. Mm-hmm. And Gallery Cabaret.
Mm-hmm. February 1st, Friday, February 1st, every first Friday.
Okay. That's two shows at the gallery then.
Mm-hmm.
Two regulars.
Well, every Wednesday I do it, and then every first Friday. Yeah, so it's definitely with some regularity. There's also five different open mics, music open mics throughout the week.
Oh.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that other people's vibrations cause or draw out any of these manic episodes of any of the characters in your play, or of Violet herself, or of the writers of this? Other people, can they bring this stuff onto us or out of us?
If you're open to it and that's what you want.
All right.
Mm.
If you're opening your channel up and that's what you are asking for, yeah.
I think it depends on, my personal worldview doesn't really allow for other people's energy to really super affect mine. I think that my energy field might like mimic people's sort of vibrations sometimes, negative or positive, you know. But what people bring to it, I think, can energize me for sure.
There you go.
Definitely. And but I don't know that it's. I think mania is. It's a symptom. It's not really kind of like something you shoot for or like want to have. It just kind of happens. It's part of the whole ride. And so other people, I'd like to think that the locus of that is internal.
Mm. Okay. So maybe less rubbed off on from others' energies that trigger something inside that set us off.
I mean, there's a number of other things that I could be triggered about that's not necessarily my mania or bipolar disorder, but...
It's just pet peeves.
I mean, dysphoria, pet peeves.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. And then being, let's just say, there's a manic. You don't have to speak as a professional or just as opinion. Mm-hmm. Being that there's a manic episode, we're talking about bipolarism. I think the creativity that you are putting out is great for us to see and be entertained, but maybe we could all learn something here. those that labeled themselves or as not bipolar. Is there a technique involved in you getting creative when one is in a manic episode, or is it just so far out of control that one just needs to succumb to the feelings?
I think that's where it crashes. I think it's kind of a one-way ticket to that. I think it, a lot of times in my more manic times, I've been super super creative, and I'm like, I don't need to eat, I don't need to sleep, I'm doing this for 8 hours straight, and it's gonna end. If you don't take care of yourself, it's going to end badly. I think that the secret is really self-care, that you can integrate with self-care.
And this is one of the things that Jill talks about, who's also a cast member of our Bipolar Bitch, who's also bipolar. She says, it makes you aware that you have to take responsibility for it, for yourself, that you have to, take responsibility, make sure that you're getting enough sleep, make sure that you're eating at a regular time, sort of thing.
Because nobody but you can kind of glue yourself back together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else's glue is only temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it up right now.
Very profound, though. I do appreciate that, though. It's, I think it's true.
Probably Pleiadian transmission.
Probably.
Pleiadian.
You mentioned Jill, so there's another archetype. Can we go into that archetype?
So Jill plays the orphan rebel. Mm-hmm. And her shadow side is she has a lot of anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
And she struggles with, feeling like the victim and trying to overcome that, energy.
Mm. Have we addressed each archetype? Because there is one more performer that we haven't
spoken
about.
Yeah, the trickster figure was played by Robert Puig. And he represents the trickster magician who wears all these masks, literally and figuratively, in the show. And he distracts you with his illusions, and he distracts you with his different masks and persona. But his challenge is to accept sort of the darkness within himself, because he's always in denial. So he's always putting on a show, always trying to be overly happy, that sort of thing. So,
and I loved the kind of like nod to the old sort of Commedia dell'arte theatrical sort of, because everything about that was archetypes. It was, the miser, the trickster, the lovers, and bam, but there's so many archetypes, human archetypes. I mean, we're so complicated.
And these cut across cultures, a lot of these, which is why, why Jung calls them the collective unconscious. Mm-hmm. It's not just, very specific to one culture or another. This is what it means to be human. This is a human thing rather than a specifically cultural thing.
Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of have little bits and pieces of each of these archetypes, but some of us are obviously more drawn to one or the other.
And I think we express a variety of archetypes throughout our lives. I think that's kind of what life's about, is trying those on and playing in them.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Aside from Violet, is there another character in the piece that draws others together for in another way? So Kelly's character, if you wouldn't mind, elaborate that to me.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of a maternal caretaker aspect, in sort of the manic phase of that. She wants to heal the world, take care of everybody, but she's caught in her own delusion.
Mm-hmm.
So her effectiveness on that is challenged. She has to find grounding. She has to find the earthy part of herself.
And that's a huge aspect of a lot of bipolar disorder.
It's the grounding
problem, because there's, symptomatically on the manic side of things, you have this thing called derealization or depersonalization or dissociation. These are all sort of...
psychotic break.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be as acute as that, because, in terms of my personal experience of mixed bipolar disorder, on a daily basis, there's most of the day I don't believe anything's real.
Right.
It's just
like we're living in a movie.
Or just it's almost over. It's just kind of like it's a scene, and then I wake up in the next moment and it's just like I'm in an improv class with no teacher and and there I go.
Could that something like that lead to like a life without realization of consequence? So one could do whatever.
That's one of the dangerous parts of mania.
That's where the suicide stuff comes in. Yeah, exactly. Sure. Where you feel so invincible that you're literally deluded into thinking nothing can affect you, touch you, harm you, whatever. Yeah.
It must feel good in some ways.
Sure.
While there.
Yeah, in the same way that heroin probably feels good.
Probably.
I mean, I wouldn't know personally, but I bet it does.
Yeah.
I bet it feels great.
I bet you there's while a draw, yes. there apparently a million users can't be wrong.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
I feel like America's got more than a million.
Perhaps. Yeah,
I think there's a lot more than that. Yeah. Especially with opioid
crisis right now.
But hey, you know, pharmaceutical stuff is also at the heart of this.
It sure
is. Play
as
well.
Yeah.
There's
and Pfizer.
A few government conspiracies suggesting there's some involvement as well.
Sure. Well, I mean, when you sell opioids and the drugs to get off opioids.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Isn't that kind of funny? And then you make billions and billions of dollars and you're a Forbes, you know, top 10, or maybe not top 10, but up there.
And it's a little weird that there was a war in a region of the world that is heavily producing opioids that I don't know if there was a specific...
Do you mean Afghanistan?
Yeah.
The country with whom we're still at war?
Yeah.
Apparently?
There is that.
Is there a reason for that? We don't know. I don't know. That's
I
up for debate.
I think it's heroin.
There might be that connection.
That's my guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just spitballing here.
Yeah, I think we're all throwing wads in the wall of paper spit.
paper spit
wads. you know. and pencils up into the ceiling tiles. Recall those days of youth?
Yes.
Yes.
I like it when it got stuck up there.
Yeah?
And then it came down at a most inopportune moment.
Yeah.
Just like bipolar disorder.
I was just going to say.
Exactly.
We're double entendre season right here.
We might even be triple entendre at this point.
Definitely.
We're getting meta.
Very meta.
I think it's a good time to refresh people where we could see this show, yourself,
or
both of you in various performance personas.
Well, all right.
You can see both of us at 10:30 p.m. every Saturday.
And Friday.
And Friday?
Yeah, my show's Friday.
Right.
But the Bipolar Bit Show is every Saturday, 10:30 p.m. at the Prop Theater, 3502 North Elston, and it is pay what you can.
You know that's right under Addison on Elston, right by the Little Caesars, so you could conceivably... Eat a whole Little Caesars pizza to yourself.
You totally
And then
could.
Come enjoy our play.
And you could have some crazy bread, too.
Would you accept...
Bipolar bread, that's what we call it.
Yeah, it is.
Crazy for bipolar, I get it.
It's much more politically correct.
I agree.
Would you accept people bringing those pizzas to the audience?
I know Paul Brennan would love it.
Paul Brennan would love that.
Yeah, I would.
And Paul Brennan is part of the show?
Yes, he's our hero.
As we mentioned him earlier. And others involved in the show on Saturday nights, where at and when at?
Kelly Anchors, 10:30 p.m. every Saturday.
Okay.
Jillian Erickson, Paul Brennan, Robert Puig.
And Larry Hart. Oh, my gosh. We have to also mention set
Carl
design
Young.
By
Rick
Paul.
Paul.
Oh, my gosh. Just wait.
All right. You've got some backstage help. I think
oh, yes. And
Kelly really.
Keith Ryan, the wig.
Oh, my gosh. The wig.
Goddess.
Would you just get out of town?
Right here.
Wig Baba. Hair Baba.
Totally. I have pink hair in this show, just FYI, and it's the most amazing wig I think I have ever worn in a production, like ever.
Anyone else involved in this?
Marlena Carlson, stage manager, booth op extraordinaire.
And lighting designer.
Yeah, she is.
From what I heard, can toot her own horn pretty well.
Yeah, literally.
Okay.
She could tutor people on horn tooting.
Yeah, she could.
That's an inside joke for anybody that was at the Prop Theater on Saturday night.
She's quite a drummer, too.
Dang, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Yeah, she drums, for
There's
real.
Levels.
There's extreme levels to everybody you don't even know about.
You don't even know.
No, you are just on the edge and the skin and the onion first layer. And
right.
There's so much more.
I mean, you'd use the iceberg metaphor, but, you know, climate change.
Yeah, there's
true.
Only that much.
It's not even going to make any sense to the kids.
No.
What's an iceberg?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what's all this water?
Mm-hmm.
My swimming pool just got filled all without
mysteriously.
Yeah. Okay. Bipolar bitch. I think we've got everybody and where and when. And
oh gosh,
did we miss anybody?
I hope we have everybody. Yeah, Mike helped a lot too.
Mike McCoon,
yeah,
who is amazing note giver, mm-hmm, observer of rehearsals.
And his show's right before ours too. So if you want a little double feature,
yeah.
Oh gosh, yes. Stefan Brun was also very helpful.
Very helpful.
And Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh. Into nothingness. And Carl Jung.
Or into meaninglessness. Man cannot stand a meaningless life. We need more understanding of human nature, because the only real danger that exists is man himself. He is the great danger. And we are pitifully unaware of it. We know nothing of man. Far too little. His psyche should be studied, because we are the origin of all coming evil.
My knife makes lips and every kiss makes the wind outside get colder. Can you feel it blowing colder? I smiled it right into your hip and you bit me in the shoulder. You tore me right out of my shoulder. I wasn't born this desperate.